My name is Nicolette. I'm an alcoholic. I'm incredibly grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm back. I was here last week. We talked about step 10 out of the big book, a really important step for just kind of keeping me grounded, aware, moment to moment, kind of present with what's going on internally primarily and how I'm impacted by, you know, my mind's interpretation of what's going on externally or around me. And I want to say, like, step 11 is my favorite step, but I would be lying. Every step is my favorite step. The step that I'm presenting on is my favorite step. So today my favorite step and the most valuable step is step 11. But I say this all the time. I'm constantly telling the women I work with, every time we read a paragraph, I'm like, this is so important. This is the most important sentence in the big book. And they're like, you said that like 20 times already. You know, so... But for me, it's an incredibly valuable step. So two things that happened at the beginning of this meeting. I reflected on the fact that there was a time that I couldn't sit still for a second. And there was nothing still about me. You know, silence was an enemy. Getting in touch with myself was foreign. It was unknown. I was afraid of the unknown. I didn't know how to sit still. I constantly needed distraction, and I constantly avoided whatever was happening inside of me. And then another memory that came up when we were sitting quietly for 2 minutes is that the first time my sponsor asked me to sit quietly for 2 minutes, I cheated. I like at 30 seconds, because 30 seconds was like an eternity, I looked at my clock. I was like, you know, like cheating, like one eye open, like, and I couldn't believe that 30 seconds passed. And I realized that something in me is resistant to sitting quietly, number one. It was something that I really needed to practice and familiarize myself with, and that I needed to become friends with the quiet, right? And later on throughout my recovery, I've been in the room since September, my sober date is September 15, 2006. It took a life, you know, so far, 15 years of genuine effort and seeking to be in a place where silence is a friend. It's a friendly, comfortable place for me. Like, there's nothing lacking when I'm in quiet or when I'm in stillness. You know, and I can't really say that that was always the case. And so... I'll tell you more as we read, because it's really a big book meeting and I really want to read. The big book is going to say it way better than me. So we're on page 86. No, are we on page 86? No, we're not. We're on page 85. All the way at the bottom is where step 11 starts. And coincidentally, the paragraph right before that, I talked about... I'm just going to read the paragraph before, which kind of ends the directions on step 10, because I think it's an important paragraph to come into step 11 with. It says, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. And so it's saying to me that by the time I get to step 11, there's already an experience of removing all the selfing that I've been walking around as a result of the inventory I've done, as a result of the confessional element of the fifth step, as a result of seeing my powerlessness in the way I move in life and my character defects that show up, as a result of making some amends. I started to travel lighter through life, you know, not wake up like about the shoes about to drop, started to trust people, myself, and the world around me a little bit more. And as a result of kind of keeping up with my inner inventory, I get in touch with the depth of my own being that can guide me moment to moment in real time. I have no idea if that made sense, but this is really about present moment. This is really about being here now 100%. That's what that means to me. That's what it has meant for me in my experience of what it does for me and what it points to. The book is pointing to be here now. everything is okay. Trust. And so with that vital sixth sense that we start developing as a result of reflection, we go into step 11. And step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We talk a lot about prayer in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't talk enough about meditation in Alcoholics Anonymous, which tells me it's a challenge for most of us. And it is a challenge. People don't want to get quiet. It's boring. The mind comes in and talks about yesterday's dinner and tomorrow's breakfast. I wonder how much time has passed. What's the use of this? What's the point? All of that mental chatter that happens in the virtual reality of my mind starts occurring. And it makes me very, very uncomfortable. And it tells me how little I know myself. And I can't do this stuff unless I'm willing to get in touch with myself and get to know the depth of my being. And it says we shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works, and there are some conditions for it to work, if we have the proper attitude. So the question is, what is a proper attitude? And work at it. What does it mean to work at it? It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And the way I see proper attitude is an attitude of willingness and an attitude of wanting and an attitude on openness, kind of like the opposite of contempt prior to investigation, like thinking that it's useless or that I don't need it or what's the point or it's not for me or I can't meditate or I'm not a monk or I can't get to Tibet in order to have a spiritual awakening, or whatever my idea is about getting quiet or sitting still or having a dialogue with a higher power that I can't see, I can't touch, I can't smell with my other five senses, right? It is about developing that sixth sense and work at it, that I show up. I show up for this exercise. I am willing to practice it daily. When we and then it goes into directions, right? When I retire at night, we constructively review our day. It says constructively because, boy, did I do it destructively in the beginning. Because that's all I knew. I just knew how to take my own inventory very, very negatively. I shouldn't have done it. I shouldn't have said it. Oh, my God. You know. And this is why this word is so important. Constructively, it's more like a witness of my own self. I'm just observing how I went through the day. What was my relationship with everything I encountered? And everything I encounter today is not just people. It could be like my apartment, you know, the sink, a dish, like anything I encounter. What is my relationship with anything that's in front of me? So I review my day, and of course we go for the, you know, the big ones. Was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Right? All the steps are right there. Everything that blocks me from the spirit, from inspiration, from God, that shuts me off, that closes me up, that clenches me up, that makes me unavailable to move from a healthier place, from a place of spirit that's very much the place of self. The mind is leading the way. There's a story that I believe. I'm the judge and the jury already. You have been charged. and I'm in pain. So was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? And, you know, 15 years later, it becomes very obvious to me when I'm resentful, selfish, dishonest, and afraid. But I have to look for all the intricate ways that that manifests. You know, there's branches, various branches of, and they're really clever. You know, did I omit something can be dishonest, right? Was I inconsiderate in some aspect of my life can be selfish. Did I make someone lesser than even if I wasn't resentful at them? You know, did I put them down or, you know, not give my time? Was I not present for something? So this can be this is like looking at me. My sponsor told me, you're the only fish you need to catch. You're the only fish you need to catch. Keep attention on you. It will give you everything you need. Anything you need to know about life, human beings, higher power, it will happen in the experience of your own being. Pay attention. Go within. Go in. Do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? Was I kind and loving toward all? What could I have done better? you know, what could I do? I could have always done something better, by the way. I've never had this question that I posed to myself without answering it. I could have done something better. Not necessarily should have, but maybe could have, right? But I'm looking at it from a spiritual point of view. You know, can I surrender more deeply? Can I let go more deeply? Can I love more truly? Can I be more honest even with myself in certain areas? You know, was I thinking of myself most of the time, or was my attention on from the neck up? Basically, when I lead my day from the neck up, I'm in so much trouble. Oh my God, the stuff that goes through my head. I mean, guys, I'm crazy. You're crazy too if you're in this room. I mean, I'm assuming you're crazy. I mean, we're in the same club. I mean, like, talk about, you know, like, just our inventory, our fourth-step inventory is a perfect example of how much I can delude myself with the stories I tell myself about life. You, I think I know what you're thinking, what you're saying. You're all judging me. I'm, like, petrified of being up here. I think I know everything you guys see and think, and, like, it's just thinking, it's amazing. And steps 10 and 11, and step 11 especially, really forces me to develop a relationship with something other than my mind. I need another reference point. I need to get in touch with the neck down, with the depth within me, deep down within me. I need to get in touch with that, and I need to operate from that place. Let that place dictate what I do next. It'll tell me, can I trust it, right? But, you know, like, I don't trust. I come into these rooms like not trusting. Life is not safe. People are not safe. People will disappoint me. There's too much heartbreak. There's too much sadness. I can't handle it. Life is an enemy. I think that the work that we do here is about befriending the present moment and trusting life, God, higher power, trusting the universe that it is intelligent, that it knows what it's doing, that it will inform me if I allow it, if I trust it, if I do my work, which is to stay present, to be real, to be here now. The most difficult thing to do. Because that thing for the ego is uncertain. It's like being naked all the time. Nothing is guaranteed. Because I'm not controlling anything, I'm not managing anything, I'm not predicting anything, I'm not holding on to anything. And the whole game here is about I don't have control. Lack of power is my dilemma, I can't deal with it. The first lesson is I can't put down the drink or the drug. Then I see in my inventory, I have no control over life, heartbreaks, him leaving me, them dying, the things that happen. I don't even have control over how I move sometimes. Right? What do I do from that place? Right? I need to be okay with here now. I need to trust it. And so it's really about development of that. I think this is what they mean by fate. This, I might think totally differently, by the way, 2 years from now. I don't know. Don't quote me on this. But this is where I'm at right now. I think this is what fate's about. I think this is what they mean. Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Or was I thinking of what I could do for others, or what I could pack into the stream of life? But I must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. I love this sentence because some of us are tuned up to be more, to lean towards being very perfectionistic and want to do things a certain way and beat ourselves up destructively and stuff like that. And it took me, you know, inventories and some life experience to recognize that that's just ego, like doing this exercise. How can I be a better ego? You know, I want to be a better action figure, you know, so that others can see me a certain way and I can't fail and I need to be perfect. This is why this exercise is so perfect, because like you get a fresh answer all the time. And just as I think that I got it, I see I don't. I can go deeper. I can go deeper with this stuff. I can go as deep as I want to go with this stuff. That's the beauty of the big book. This is why it's timeless. It's in its simplicity and its truth. This is why it's the truth, because it's like it's never changing. It like It like delivers every time. After making a review, I ask God forgiveness. I ask God's forgiveness. I have this dialogue with this higher power that I need guidance from. The one who knows it all. Whether it's religious or spiritually, don't matter. Really anything, just to relax the mind. Whatever the higher power is. And listen, I'm a girl who I have a college degree based on a thesis that proved that there's no God. This is the most important relationship in my life today. Trust me, I can intellectualize this thing all you want. I'll win every debate when it comes to disproving God. Or I think I would. So what a great lesson. What a wonderful fierce grace for me to end up in Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, yeah? Oh, you think you know? Huh? Yeah. So talk about humility. Nothing else was going to bring me to my knees and make me open, you know, to a different perspective. So we're talking about God. Run. No, I'm kidding. No, we're talking about God. Yeah. God's forgiveness, and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. You know, and God's forgiveness can be also forgiving myself, right? Because the book talks about on page 55, where is he to be found deep down within us? Deep down within every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It can only there be found, right? If we search diligently and fearlessly, we'll find him there. The book talks about that. In order for me to connect to that depth of my own being, I need to get quiet. I need to make friends with the quiet. So that was the, at the end of the day exercise. Step 10 was moment to moment. Step 11 at night is at the end of the day. Right? I review my day with God. And I would call it in the beginning of my recovery, it was like seeking truth. I review my life with truth. Truth was God for me, and love was God for me in my early recovery. And I looked up to those two values. Now in the morning, on awakening, let's think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day before we begin our plans for the day, before we do anything. I invite God into my life. I dialogue with this higher power. I acknowledge this higher power in any shape and form. I ask God to direct my thinking, because what happens when God is not, when love and truth are not directing my thinking? I'm self-will run riot. When I play God, I'm going to step on some toes. I'm going to step on some toes because I'm thinking about myself, but the rules that apply to me don't apply to you, so somebody's getting hurt and it's not going to be me. But it's really going to be me. You all got that, right? Okay. So I ask God to direct my thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives, right? It's not about me. Right, I'm not here to serve the little me that's constantly afraid, wants to manage and control. It doesn't. There's no value to it. It's been proven to me already. It doesn't deliver. It doesn't make me happy. It doesn't make me satisfied. I know this already. I've had the experience of it. And in order for me to get relief from self, I need to get loaded. I get loaded to get relief from my own self. How can I have self run my life? If self is running my life, I'm going to need relief. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. I can't live a selfish life and expect to feel fulfilled or satisfied. Or happy. If I could, I would, by the way. I am not playing a martyr here. Or this is not like because it's, oh, let's be good. I didn't get sober to be a good girl. I really didn't. My life depended on it. I drank when I didn't want to drink. When I had all the reasons not to drink. Somebody said, think about the price of your last drink. The price of my last drink was almost my life. I tried to kill myself. It was like my life. Yes, eviction notices and lost everything and all, everything was shut off. Sure, all of that, my health, I was having seizures, all of that. But the price of my last drink was my life. So recovery is priceless in what we have been given here. And then he tells me about how I move through the day. In thinking about our day, we may face... Yep, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. So when I'm in doubt, when I'm unclear how to proceed, when I'm unsure on how to move on something, what do? I ask God for direction or guidance. I ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. But if you're going to ask, then you got to let it go. You can't. You know, I've done this. I've asked, and then I tried to solve the puzzle and answer the question and maybe try to sneak in. But I really think we should do it this way. But then I'm, you see how that's playing God? Like, if I really want the, if I really see that I don't have the answer, I need to be honest about that. It's very humbling. This stuff is humbling. It's very humbling. And this is why these exercises are crucial. Not only for me to see that once I get in touch with that thing in me, it's incredibly powerful to be in touch with that, to be tapped into the power that keeps me sane and sober. And delivers, right? We get to experience that. That's sufficient. Like, I don't lack anything. With that power, I can meet anything. Anything. I'm not easily ruffled. It's like living life without this was like I was on the bottom of the pendulum that swung left and right, and boy, did life take me for a ride. Like, I felt every emotion, everything was dramatic, I was a magnet for trouble, you know, like everything was wrong, I was all over the place. With these practices, right, I move up the pendulum. And so I get to the part of the pendulum that observes the ups and downs of life. Yes, my dad passed away. Yes, the man I loved, got, you know, didn't work out. We married. Yes, I have challenges and issues and difficulties and heartbreaks and uncertainties and financial. And yes, COVID. But you're kind of observing it, and something in me is not moved by it. That's incredibly attractive to me. I want that kind of freedom. I don't want to be easily ruffled. But that by the vicissitudes of life. And he talks about that in the beginning of the book. It warns me about that. I'll get some relief from AA or from doing some step work, but if I don't take this all the way and really follow the outlines of this book, I will not be able to meet the certain ups and downs of life. And without this practice and service, I definitely wouldn't have been sitting here sober. Because for somebody who also has some time, I think we have to do even more work to stay conscious sometimes. Because I'll take things for granted and I'll rest on yesterday's accomplishments. And I'm going to crave and need humility. And it'll come one way or another. And I'd rather put myself in a position of humility and recognize on a daily basis how little I know sometimes. And how easy it is for me to lose my way and not be authentic and not be real and not be honest and have fear creep into my life and paralyze me from doing things and taking risks and having experiences. So I ask God, I don't ask myself for inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. I ask God for it. And then what do? I relax and take it easy. I don't struggle. You know when you lose your keys? You know when you lose your keys and you're like, where are the keys and where are the keys? And you're like, you know, losing your mind about, like, you know, you're trying to remember where you put it down and you're like struggling and you're, you're doing it on your own power. And then you're just like finally surrender. You're like, they're gone. It's like over. I will never see these keys again. It's I'm tired. This is ridiculous. You know, forget it. And then you like take three steps and like the keys are right there. They're like suddenly you're like remember, you know, like just it comes out of nowhere. Where does that come from? What a great exercise. I really think we complicate this and we miss that it's already present in our human lives. Without Alcoholics Anonymous, this is just giving words, and it's giving us like a way of life that really, it's just a lighter way to live and move through the day and move through life, you know? So that's what's asking. And for me, spiritually speaking, and there's no spiritually speaking, not spiritually speaking, everything is spiritual, everything is spirit, but I got to get quiet. I got to be still so that I can tell the truth, because sometimes truth... did something happen?
No.
Okay. But sometimes truth evades me, right? I remember practicing an exercise like, what do you know that you don't want to know? What do you know that you don't want to know? And it's so funny, when I know something I don't want to know, I'm in pain. I'm just a little more cranky. I'm just a little more frustrated. I'm just a little bit more annoyed. I'm just a little more tight. I'm just not at ease. My body's not light, you know. Everything is a drag. Everything is a burden. I feel more confusion because I'm not looking at the only direction I need to be looking at. And if I get quiet, every time I got quiet, something came up for review. Like there's no escaping it because you're willing to face it. You know? So we are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. I need to practice this. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. What a great promise. That's a promise. What only happened occasionally becomes like working part of my day-to-day life. It becomes available to me. This is a powerful tool for me to have at my disposal. Being still in experience and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd ideas and actions. Guilty. I thought like it was spiritually motivated. Certain like ideas I had. Never, that was wrong. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration in spirit, coming from spirit, and I'll understand and see that by the fruits of the. It's an American idiom. Fruits of the tree of the
labor.
Thank you. Thank you. We come to rely upon it. I start to trust it, right? Catastrophe in front of me. I don't like it. It's bringing me suffering. It's causing me pain. I have sadness. But I somehow trust that it can't be any other way. I somehow trust that life has a bigger picture. There's a teaching or a redirection. Or what an incredible way to live. When I can live like that, that anything that happens, I trust. Including the painful stuff. Yes, I have preferences. I'm not just like, yeah, it's all God. No, it's like I really like, you know, couldn't have been any other way. I'm like done arguing with reality. Like I never won an argument with reality. Never. It don't matter how many times I said, he shouldn't have died. He's dead. The conversation about that needs to change. My story needs to change. My perception needs to change. Like I will never win an argument with reality. But the way I see it can change. And it can change the quality of my life dramatically and make me available for others who go through those things to see that they can get through stuff like that, that the heart can bear it all, that you are large enough and big enough to experience it all. It's incredibly courageous to live life of sobriety, I think. This is courage. This gives me balls, so to speak. I'm sorry. But, you know, like this is, you know, what is incredibly courageous. So I come to react. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be. Right? This is continuously the intent. There's a dialogue here. This is a prayer. I'm asking for something. By asking it, I'm also acknowledging its presence, by the way. There's a dialogue only with that which you believe in. What my next step is, that I be given whatever I need to take care of such problems. So problems, I don't ask for problems not to come, and I don't ask for personal preferences. I ask to be fully present and available for whatever does come. I pray for God's will. I pray for whatever life has in mind. I trust life with however it moves, what it takes away, what it adds, what it subtracts, the challenge it... I wouldn't be here if I didn't... What I thought was the worst thing in my life ended up being the best. Like, I have no clue what I need. I got no idea. I got no idea how much beauty it can be in deep sadness until I experience it. From this place. We ask especially for freedom from self-will or the ego, right? Or from selfish motives. This is really important. Like, less me, more God. There's that saying in Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people say it, and it's like really attractive, and it sounds really good. But half the people you ask, what does it mean? And they're like, less me, more God. What do you mean by that? Like, talk to me. What does that mean to you? Like, how does that show up in your day-to-day life? Less argument with reality and what's happening and what's in front of me? More trust that life knows what it's doing? Even when those things that you don't like are happening? Even when you feel like someone's mistreating you? Even when the job didn't give you a raise you felt you deserved and worked hard for? Even when the loved one cheats on you? You know, I can rationalize anything. You know, we talk a lot about what's the mental state that precedes the relapse, but what's the mental state that precedes lying, cheating, stealing, taking a little off the top? Why? Because I'm in fear? Because I feel like I lack? Because I might not get it? And I think I need it? This is how this translates for me. This is why it's so important. This is like juicy. This is like really good stuff. So I ask for freedom from that which lacks and is scared. The little me, the mini me. Nicoletta, the action figure, who's like so nervous to come speak here, but knows better because of this work and shows up anyway. 15 years ago, I would lie and tell you I'm not available. And justify it and freak out about it for 3 days and rationalize it and hide it from others because I don't want them to think I'm a liar. And, right? Now it's like, okay, fear's here, okay, but let's do this. You know, it's not about me. Whatever. And are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. Right? It has to be inclusive. Not exclusive, meaning only me. Like, life doesn't revolve around me. Life doesn't happen to me. Life happens. Life just happens. I get to be a part of it. If I can see that as a gift, I'll have a better life. This action figure will, at least. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Why? Because it doesn't work. Why are they telling me that? Why wouldn't I pray for my own selfish ends? Because I don't know one alcoholic that hasn't in one form or another prayed for selfish ends. It doesn't work. That's why. You don't get hurt. It doesn't come from a place of power. It's not tapped into power. It's not coming from a place of truth or what's needed. Right? It's what I need, not what's needed. It's what I want, not what's wanted. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that and it doesn't work. Oh, I totally forgot that sentence was there. It doesn't work. Even the book says it doesn't work, by the way. You can easily see why. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. Serenity Prayer in short and long form were my favorite prayers in early recovery, and the St. Francis Prayer. And those are the only two prayers I did for a very, very, very long time because I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know how to have a dialogue. I didn't think anybody could hear me. I didn't think that I knew what I was doing. I was even back then pretending and telling you that I prayed, but I felt nothing. That was the truth. I sat in silence because my sponsor told me. I prayed because my sponsor told me. I did it because you guys said you were doing it and you were staying sober. You were my examples, and I just tried to do what you did because I was trying to save my life. No other reason. And as I continued to show up for it, more got revealed. Just like the book promises that more will get revealed, and more got revealed. And there were moments of breakthroughs and moments of trust and moments where I saw that that life personally knew me and was taking care of me. And that I was provided everything I needed. Not everything I wanted, but everything I needed. And what I needed was a lot more juicier and important than what I wanted. And sharing that with someone, you know, is more powerful. Partners, friends, sponsors, groups, meditation groups, church, mass, whatever you move to do. Which are, you know, there's a line in the book that says, "See to it where religious people were right." It doesn't say see to it that they were right. It says where they were right, that people of faith had a better life, that there was something there that was incredibly attractive, that despite all of their suffering, they were able to smile and have a warmth in their eyes. What is that about? I was curious about that. I was curious and I was interested. There are many helpful books. Also, suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. It's right here. I thought it was like earlier in the book. It's not. It's right here. That's so great. I love that sentence. Make use of what they offer. Stay open. Be curious. For me, that was be curious. Stay open. Granted, like at 18 months sober, my sponsor dropped me off at a meditation retreat where we meditated from 4 in the morning till 9 at night in the middle of Massachusetts field in a tent that was free where you couldn't speak for 10 nights. I don't recommend it. At day 3, I was just like ready to run. I was sober. I was 18 months sober. I had this impulse to have this relationship with God in a way I saw some of the AA members had that I didn't have. And we did these meditations that were hour long, and on the third day they told us not to move. On the third day of doing a 1 hour long meditation where they tell you not to move for the fifth time, I thought I had cancer. And I thought that my knees were giving out forever. I was like 28 years old, 29 years old. My knees were giving out forever. I had pain in parts of my body I didn't even know existed. I had a song stuck in my head that I hated. On repeat. You want to know how powerless you are over your mind? Sit. That made me stronger than anything that I've ever done. To recognize that there is nothing going on except that I'm sitting on a cushion for 60 minutes. And in my head is a war zone. I think I know the guy that's breathing heavy next to me. He's judging me. I'm thinking about the lunch, the free lunch that they're giving in 1 hour. I'm thinking about the pain in my knee and how I'll never be able to walk again. None of that is happening. None of that is happening. I'm bawling my eyes out. I'm seeing how much I don't want to move because they told me not to move, but everything in me wants to move. As a result of trying to put myself in that position, I was able to have 60-minute meditations that passed in 1 minute. 1 minute. I was able to sense expansiveness internally that I never felt before. It's really not like fluffy voodoo shit. It's just sit. It's sit, and check it out. It's a 60-minute experiment, 30-minute experiment, 20-minute experiment with your own self. Talk about tapping into the power and the mystery of our depth of our being and what we can show up for and how we can be. Get quiet. It's probably the one thing that's made me strongest. To meet life. You know? I've done that like 10, 15 times. Various retreats, books, you know, chants, churches. I'm curious. I'm open. I'm willing. I see beauty in it. I can walk into a Catholic mass and, you know, the guys that are doing the thing, I don't even know what they're doing, and the chants in the back, beautiful. I feel it. My heart opens up. I tear up a little bit. Sweet. I feel like something got fed in me. Like something was, you know, it wasn't about, you know, Dexter on binge and ice cream, you know, which I can do too. You know? Like, it's just like, I need to feed that. I need to give that some attention. Make use of what they offer. Get hungry. Get curious. Put yourself out there. I did. As we go through the day, we pause. Pause. So important. Anytime I regretted anything, I didn't pause. You can't take that back. Once it comes out of your mouth, it's over. It's done. It becomes part of reality. There's no turning back. You know? It's like, boy, did I mess up? Sober. Because I didn't pause. Made someone feel less than. Hurt somebody. And anytime I hurt somebody, I hurt myself. I hurt a part of myself. I really do. I know this today. I know this today, even when I want to hurt them. You know? For a second, usually. Mine doesn't last too long because of this work. But boy, you know, we're nuts. When agitated or doubtful, those are my signs. If I get agitated or doubtful, like get quiet, step away, pause, take a break, move away, chill, reset, center, ground, pray. Check it out. I check it out. You know, I check it out. And as for the right thought or action, we constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. I'm not in charge. I don't have that control. I'm not in control. This is what life constantly reminds me. I just acknowledge it. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, favorite prayer of the book, if it's the only prayer you ever do, it's sufficient. Your will, not mine, be done. Thy will be done. It says everything. Surrender to life. It's acceptance of what is, even if I don't like it, I don't appreciate it, I have other preferences. It's a voluntary surrender to God, to life, to reality. It's, I'm not running the show, I'm not in charge, I'm not driving the bus, I don't have control, I'm humbled. We are then in much less danger of excitement. So it tells me excitement is something I should be watching for. Fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient, right? Just an efficient way. I mean, like people ask me, how do you have 15 sponsors? I don't know how I have 15 sponsors. I don't count my sponsors. It's just happening. You know, if there's too many, I say no. And somehow God provides, and there's time, and we do the work, and then we move on, and then we live it together, and then another one comes, and it's just like, it's not like I'm like on the phone 15 times a day. You know, I meet once a week, we do the work, we live it, next, you know, kind of like, yeah, I make myself available. God provides the time, God provides the place, God makes it happen if it's coming from an honest place. We do not tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves, or when we were playing God, right? And we were acting as the directors of our lives and everybody else's lives, because not only do I think I know what's best for me, but I think I know what's best for you. You know? And how you should be. And that's very tiring. And so I know also when I get tired and I don't have energy for stuff, I know that I have some agenda somewhere that I'm not paying attention to. I have some agenda and I'm on like autopilot in the mind. And I'm like trying, I'm not satisfied with something, so I want to manipulate it and move it around and manage it and check it out and peek my head into it. And that's very tiring because I don't have the power for that. So I'm constantly exerting. It works, it really does. To let go, like chill out, everything is fine. That's the idea. The idea is like, it's okay. Everything is okay. It's not it's going to be okay. It's okay. Like, you're safe, protected, you're enough, your existence is enough, here, now, trust. That's what it's like saying in summary to me. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. And so it just kind of leads me from this place of, like, I make myself available to being used for what really life's existence is about and what can give me meaning and purpose and fulfill my life. And then everything else is a byproduct of that. I used to want the byproducts and couldn't get them. Then I made a commitment to honor a spiritual way of life and make it most important. And as a byproduct of that, I got everything else. That just blows my mind still. Blows my mind. We will be taken care of. If our house is in order and we are in service. And this is a service path. Alcoholics Anonymous is a service path. We're going to talk about God and we're going to talk about service. But I'm going to stop talking now. And thank you so much for having me.